Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Not a good weekend to play golf or enjoy outdoor activities very much.
No.
But
you took off early for a golf tournament Friday that never got off the ground.
Huh? Well, we ended up playing Friday afternoon, but not in the member guest event. They created a Stapleford event to give us something to do on Friday afternoon when it cleared, but then attempted Saturday, didn't happen. Olympia, in addition to Oak Park,
right?
The Oak Park Country Club member guest being canceled, rescheduled. And Olympia Fields shut down Saturday and Sunday because the creeks overflowed.
Flooded
the course.
Yeah, we had tornado warnings in Chicago, and we're Central Chicago. Did you know that? Never heard that term in my life, but they said, get in your basement now if you're in Central Chicago, Wrigleyville, Lincoln Park, Rogers Park, seek shelter now, because they thought that there was a tornado inside a thunderstorm.
But it was apparently a good weekend to hang out at the forest preserves, and I don't mean because of the guys who pull in backwards.
Wear trench coats.
I mean, because our very own 11-year-old producer, Justin Kosick, got engaged.
Wow. So how did you do it? Walk us through it.
And are your parents and her parents aware that there is a minimum age requirement to get married in Illinois of 18?
So Friday, we go to this dog park all the time. That is kind of our spot. We adopted little Somersault together. So naturally, we go to the dog park, take her there, let her
sickened.
Burst out her energy.
Dan loves love stories, by the way.
Okay. Is this going to end like The Notebook?
Well, it almost did. I was almost going to do it at O'Hare, but COVID hit, and then the mask requirement, and then social distancing, and God forbid I pull my mask down, I'd be tackled like David Dow. But
right,
I decided a neutral area outdoors would be the dog park that we always go to. So it was our dog's birthday on Friday, so I brought her in here. And then we brought her to the dog park, and right after we sung happy birthday to the dog, I grabbed her arm and got down on one knee.
Well, don't leave out any details. Keep going.
And I asked her if she would marry me, and she said yes.
Oh, hooray.
AM 560 Morning Crew's getting bigger. We're expanding.
Now, I understand that Tony Hawk will officiate the wedding.
Somersault's going to be the ring bearer.
Uh-huh.
Oh, you put it on his comfort. She actually is going to be the ring bearer.
Of course
she
is.
I was joking.
No, of course she is. They're going to tie a little pillow to her. Of course she is. I mean, do you listen to those two? I mean, it's dog park we go to. We co-adopted Somersault. Somersault is the name of the dog. Of course he's going to be the ring bearer. Like, he's not going to be the best man.
Okay, so I noticed on Facebook you took a picture of her with the ring on your it's a hand shot. Why not the whole, was she surprised? I mean, was she dressed up to the nines to get engaged?
Well, yeah, that's the part that kind of gave it away, is her sisters were all going to be there, and they're all like, well, let's all dress up. Who dresses up to go to a dog park? But
see? Oh, yeah. So she wasn't completely surprised.
But she was all dressed up in the way she wanted it to be. She wanted her nails to be done. I don't understand any of this.
Sure, who wouldn't? you both cried, or only you cried?
I made my mom cry, but I was just shaking so badly. I just wanted to get it over with.
No tears, though.
No tears.
See, this is important, because I've seen this before, too. I mean, just give a little bit of relationship marital advice for me.
Just as long as you don't tell jokes.
I've seen this before where if the guy cries either when proposing or when taking the vows, marriage doesn't go. It's a total thing. If the dude cries, and I do, or will you marry me, then it is not going to work
out. What about both?
Well, either one. Either one. So obviously both just stacks the odds that much more.
You might be onto something.
Yeah, I think I am. So the reception is going to be at what skate park?
The new one in West Garfield. It's an outdoor park.
What is the over-under on Dua Lipa songs at the reception, do you think? I'm going to put it at 4.
Okay.
I think First Dance, Levitating. Am I right?
Oh, my.
Am I right? I don't know.
Maybe not the First Dance, but that will definitely
Levitating
be on the
will
playlist.
Be, I know it will be.
Oh, boy.
Well, what's your first song going to be?
We have a few of them we're going through that we both like. One is A Good Night by, I think, John Legend, I think. She keeps track of all this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to choreograph your dance?
She's
a
dancer.
That's a thing, though.
She's a dancer?
Yeah.
So I'm
not
stuck.
A pole dancer. What are you doing?
No, I'm asking. She's a dancer. Ballet dancer?
She's like a ballet. So she did ballet for so many years, and then she got into dance classes, hip-hop, college.
Did you ever see Black Swan?
No, I did not. I couldn't. Right. It's too long for me.
You may want to check it out.
Think twice. So she was crying, right, or no?
Yeah, she didn't cry. You know, it's funny. My mom was the one who cried the most.
Okay. Yeah. So. Well, she's losing her baby boy. Right?
I know. It's a thing. But did you ask her parents for their daughter's hand in marriage?
Yes, I did.
Oh, good.
It took forever.
Well, why? What did they say? What was the reaction? And why did
no? They were very excited. It was just getting her away from us because we always go over there for dinners some nights and hangouts and such. But she never walked away for more than maybe 60 to 90 seconds to the point where I could pull a ring out, show them, and ask their permission.
And where you registered? I mean, I'm sure our listeners want to get in on this action,
Or if you have any advice for Justin, 312-642-5600. We're going to be talking about this all morning long.
Cast a wide net. I mean, you're in radio. You don't make any money. So cast a wide net with the presents. Where are you registered? Where's that? Nordstrom?
Oh, boy.
Target.
Cheesecake Factory.
Target.
Where?
Oh, we'll be at all the hot spots. All right. That's
Target,
all I'm best
right?
to figure out.
All right.
Target?
Look
Nordstrom's?
So monitor the the usual sites for the Justin and Beth wedding.
Yeah.
And what does Beth do? Tell us more about Beth.
She is studying in college right now. She is trying to become a counselor, get her LCPC, and she wants to go in that field.
Licensed clinical practitioner.
Yes.
Oh, very nice. And when is the wedding? It was a date been set, or you're just toying with her emotions? You're just going to extend this? We'll get engaged to buy time, but we're not setting a date for another year.
I had a completely different year. I thought we were going to wait till 2023. And
it
happened.
Oh, no, you're not, son.
We're doing it next year, September 10th.
There you go. Wow, that's quick.
September. Yeah.
Well, it's a year away. It's more than a year away. How's that quick?
Okay.
And where will this take place?
That's up for her to determine.
Oh, no. You get a say in
She
this.
Wants to plan her fairy tale dream wedding, and I want her to have that.
She's going to come in on a carriage.
No. Is this going to be like a beach wedding in Puerto Vallarta or something? This is going to be sanctified. It's going to happen at a church, I presume.
We haven't made any decisions yet, and I'm leaving that up to her because...
You go to church, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, well, you should get married at church.
Well.
You go with her to
like
church,
a real
right?
Church, or is not this... like one Amy goes to.
Okay.
Yeah. No, we go to church. It's just last time I brought up some wedding plans. It was last night I brought up, hey, why don't we check this spot out? And immediately we clashed a little bit.
Oh, my.
Well, that's going to happen.
The relationship's on the rocks already. Oh, no.
Mike Scott, you wanted to say something.
No, question answered.
What?
Come on. We're reporters. Well, one of us is a reporter here. Yeah. Who, what, when, why, where?
I said that.
Come on now.
Come on.
We finally got the date. Thank you, Dan.
Yeah, we didn't get a why, though. We didn't get
an
answer to the
why.
Why did you do this?
Well, as I noted on Facebook, she made a great decision in snagging him.
Oh,
I agree. I agree. Justin is a very talented 11-year-old, and if he ever gets out of radio, he could do a lot of things, make a lot of money, and make
That's
her very
right.
happy, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Mike, how did you propose to Melissa?
Oh, gosh.
Oh, boy.
Now we're going to do this.
Well,
how did you propose
know.
To Lord, your first husband?
Do you know how long ago that was?
I got on a knee. 30 years ago. 40 years ago.
36 years ago.
Or something like that. Yes.
Yeah. I just got down on a knee.
Okay. And
you
she
asked,
said yes.
And she said yes. We were both in college.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
It was.
Good.
It was good.
How long did you go out with her before you proposed, Justin? How long were you guys together?
We are 3 months shy of 2 years.
All right. That's not crazy. That's
not bad. And Mike, how long did you date Melissa?
About a year and a half.
All right.
Yeah.
And but when then, you know, right?
Well, Dan? We knew pretty early on. Yeah.
Okay.
How long that was going to happen.
How did you know with your first husband that he was the one here forever?
But he cried.
Told you.
I didn't, and he did. At the proposal and the wedding.
I went to a wedding a few years ago. I cried. I turned to my date. I'm like, this is going to be a catastrophe. It's not going to work. You can't have the husband. The man cannot be like the emotional, no. sentimental.
And then the woman's stern, and
it just it doesn't work.
I'm still waiting for the husband and wife to have a wedding at a golf course where the nuptials are on the first tee, and then we all get to play 18.
That's a pretty good idea, actually.
I would really
it's got
like
to be a scramble format.
That's
I
a destination.
I would really like to do that.
Not if you rent out the course.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good destination wedding.
Yep.
I've never been to a wedding like that.
Mike has been a wedding planner when he's not reporting the news, which he needs to do now.
Because he's a reporter, yes.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM 560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
This is the song that Justin and his betrothed will be twerking to at their wedding next September.
And who sings this song?
This is Dua Lipa and DaBaby.
DaBaby?
Yeah, Levitating.
Never heard this song in my life.
I'm so hip. I'm trying to be as cool and relevant and current as Eddie and Jobo.
Because you want to go to the wedding. You want an invite.
Yeah, huh? It's for the dance music, obviously.
You'll skip the wedding and just go to the reception. Yeah.
In case you missed it, we're celebrating our tech producer Justin's pending nuptials. He proposed to his girlfriend, and she said yes over the weekend.
She said yes.
She said yes. You had me at yes. Jim on I-80, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, Dan and Amy, how you doing? Hey, listen, I'm the photographer that usually does your cigar nights and Freedom Summit.
Great.
Yeah, and I was a wedding photographer for 40 years. I can tell you 1,000 stories. I'll tell you one, though. The groom wasn't feeling too well, and they're standing at the altar, and priest says to the groom, "Do you take this woman to be your lawfully wedded husband?" Wife, and she said, and he turned around and started running up the aisle away from the altar, and had both hands over his mouth, and he was spewing. He was sick, and it was going everywhere at the people.
Also, it was a bad sign.
Did he come back after he hurled?
Yeah, and they've lived happily ever after for 50 years.
Well, he might have. Did he come back?
Well, absolutely, and not only that. I forced them to stand up. The best man had to hold him up while we took wedding pictures after the ceremony. He was a sport about it. He was a good sport, but he was really sick.
Where are they now? Really sick? You mean hungover? Where are they now, Jim? Yeah.
That I don't know.
Right. Hey, let me ask you a question as a professional wedding photographer. How would you say, you know, the just married vehicle that takes the couple away? How would you stage it with the aluminum cans and all that if it was a skateboard? If the two were just driving off into the sunset on a skateboard?
Well, I would. I would make the cans a little extra longer, just as an anchor.
That's smart. That's professional. Yeah.
Structural engineering.
I actually saw one time on a motorcycle. It was a motorcycle wedding, mm-hmm. and they had the cans off. They had a motorcycle procession. The bride in the jump seat, and the groom on the Harley.
That's great. It's good to know that our wedding photographer for our events also is the official wedding photographer of the Outlaws. It's great, Jim. Good to know. Thanks so much for the call.
I had a friend in college. Her dad spent $100,000 plus on the wedding reception. She never made it to the wedding reception because she was hammered.
Yeah.
And she passed out. She missed the whole thing. Everything. Daddy, daughter, dance. So he did the dance by himself. You're like, my daughter's not feeling well.
Was there a stunt double that could go on? One of the bridesmaids?
No, it was awful. And you can't relive that. You can't get that time back.
And where are they now?
They're still together. Missed the wedding cake. the dessert table, the meal, everything. Dancing with her husband, the first dance with her husband, daddy daughter dance, it's the whole thing. So don't why get hammered? Like,
it probably cut it short though. So that was probably
No, we stayed till midnight and danced. We didn't, honey, we didn't need the bride for a party. Okay.
You know, so Justin, you don't mind if I just send a gift? You know, that's not my scene, really.
No, Justin, I think you should have
Amy
be a reader.
It. Yeah.
Dan should be a reader at your wedding, and he could read Love is Patient.
Yeah.
Love is Kind.
Right, yeah.
Hired.
Yeah.
Hired. See, yeah, you
hired.
Got yourself a gig.
Yeah, I'm back on the circuit. All right, we have to tackle some other things in addition to wedding stories this morning. President Trump was in Wellington, Ohio. Boy, it just seems like it's 2020 all over again.
It's
a Trump rally in Wellington, Ohio, and he was offering chapter and verse on the failures of the Biden administration as predicted by him.
After just 5 months, the Biden administration is already a complete and total catastrophe. I told you, crime is surging, murders are soaring. Police departments are being gutted. Illegal aliens are overrunning their borders. Nobody's ever seen anything like it. Our poor borders, they were so perfect. They were so good. Drug cartels and human traffickers are back in business like they've never been before. They're doing numbers that they've never even thought possible. And just a few short months ago, drugs were way down. Human trafficking was way down. It was all way down. It was all they had to do is go away for a little while. It was beautiful.
Cats and dogs are living together. It's anarchy. And he's not too far off the mark. By the way, American electorate agrees with him. This polling that came out, Harvard-Harris poll, finds that 80% said that illegal immigration is a serious issue that needs more attention from President Biden. And 68% said that Biden's White House are encouraging illegal immigration. 55% believe Trump's border closing policy should have been left in place. So pretty big majority, super majorities in some cases on the point of border security. And Trump went on to talk about another matter, but just on the issue of border security, since Reparation H did her pro forma visit to El Paso.
Yeah, and the reason she did that is because Trump's going to the border on Wednesday with Governor Abbott.
But he's going to the border where there's a problem,
right,
where there's the real problem exists, not El Paso. Henry Cuellar, who's a Democrat congressman from Southern Texas, right on the border, had this to say on with Hemmer and Perino on Fox.
Yes, the epicenter is down there in the lower Rio Grande, the lower part of my district down there. If you look at the numbers that are down there compared to El Paso, you're not going to get a true picture of what's happening. You go to the Donna facility, you go to Roma, Texas, you go to Rio Grande City, you go to the McAllen area, so you can get an idea. That's how you can get an idea of what's happening down to the border.
And in no uncertain terms, here's how we characterized the good vice president, Madam Vice President's visit.
I have no idea, but I'm sure her planners told her that if you're going to go down to the border, go to a something that's safer to go to, that is politically safer. If you go down to the lower Rio Grande with a high activity and you're there with kids and families, prosecutorial discretion where people are being released, high numbers of people crossing the border, you know, politically, it's harder to do that. I know that. I mean, that's part of my district. But you got to do what you got to do. You just can't, you know, just go to one place. But she does do the check the box and go down to the border by going to El Paso.
I mean, she went to the most posh place possible, if you can even use that term to describe it. But and they had plenty of time to transfer people if there was any overcrowding anyway.
You know, maybe she stopped and had dinner with Bobby O in El Paso.
Oh, that's right.
The Trump rally, according to reporting I saw by Cheryl Atkinson, more than 2.2 million people watched the rally online in addition to those in attendance. So Trump still has people paying attention, still has real currency. Are you paying attention to what President Trump has to say? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro, text line. Because one of the leading please clap Republicans, he would be Senator Mitt Romney from Utah,
mm-hmm.
had this to say about Trump and the big lie, you know, asking Jake Tapper to please clap along with him, a dutiful Republican who continues to take shots at Trump.
Well, I do think it's important for each person to speak the truth and to make clear that the big lie is exactly that. I can tell you that it is surely being used around the world to minimize the support for democracy. I mean, there is a battle going on in the world right now between the autocratic nations like China and Russia and nations that believe in democracy. And if the autocratic nations can point to the United States, which is the birthplace, really, of this modern democracy, and can say, look, they can't even run an election there that's not fraudulent. How can you possibly run it in your country? That obviously is having an impact on the cause of democracy and freedom around the world. But I also think, frankly, Jake, that here in the U.S., there's a growing recognition that this is a bit like WWF, that it's entertaining, but it's not real. And I know people want to say, yeah, they believe in the big lie in some cases, but I think people recognize that it's a lot of show and bombast, but it's going nowhere. The election is over. It was fair.
Is that right? It's just bombast. It's so much entertainment. By the way, Mitt Romney needs to update his cultural references, WWE, these days.
What he called it, WWF. Right?
Yeah, he's you know, from a time, a bygone era. But Mitt Romney, you know, this is undermining democracy. I love this argument. I'll give somebody else the opportunity to pick it apart before I do. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro. Text line, Mark in Libertyville. Hey, Mark.
Mark, are you there?
Hey, morning. Oh, my goodness. Just hearing Mr. Romney is almost more than I can bear this early in the morning. But the reason for my call is you guys were commenting about the border, and I'd like your guys' input on this, that I remember seeing videos of 10, 12 years ago, when around that time frame, that you had the usual cast of characters, Obama, Chuck Schumer, and Pelosi, Mrs. Clinton, I mean, emphatically saying that we need border security. And now, if you look at today, now, if you want border security, you're a racist, you're xenophobic, you don't like black and brown people. And I want your thoughts on this, that back then, were they so confident that they had the Hispanic and black vote that they just kind of just pushed them aside? Because now, if I'm correct, the polling actually shows that black and brown voters are shifting towards the right, which now means they need that permanent underclass, which is on the other side of that wall. Is there any method to my madness here?
There's some, although I wouldn't say that's really the whole story. First of all, the shift is incremental, but you know, every point they lose among Black and Latino voters has sort of a negative multiplier effect for them and on behalf of Republicans. So it's a problem. There's no question. But back, you know, 10, 12 years ago, as you were talking about when, and even obviously further back than that, but as recently as a decade ago, as recently as the Obama administration or Joe Obama terms 1 and 2, the reason you heard, you know, mildly tough talk on border security is because suburbanites, white ethnic voters were still part, you know, the blue collar union worker, but the trades on the trade side, not the public sector side, were still part of their constituency. Obama formally jettisoned them. And so that Reagan Democrat, that steel worker or electrician or plumber, they're no longer, if particularly if they're white, they're no longer part of the Democrat Socialist Party. They were formally jettisoned. Mitt Romney didn't recognize what was happening. Donald Trump did, and he brought him in, and that's why he won in 2016. But that was an appeal in part to them. You know, understand, when politicians are talking about an issue, it's not necessarily to the constituency you think. It can be to a broader one or a completely different one. And it was that white ethnic voter that was a union member that they could perhaps class envy their way to keeping inside their tent was part of the border security message. They formally jettisoned those individuals, and so they could embrace more or less open borders, which is what they've done, certainly with the base of their party, And yeah, and then you have, as you saw in the presidential debates, you have all of the Democrat socialists sort of dancing around the issue, not wanting to go so far as to call Border Patrol Nazis the way that AOC does, but certainly to, you know, let's go to root causes. Let's fund Northern Triangle countries. Let's not talk about a border wall. Let's, you know, children in cages. Let's focus people's attention there rather than on the larger issue of border security and so forth. And so that's what they've done, and that's how I think it's metamorphosized over the last decade. Thanks for the call, Mark. Appreciate it. Marvin in Burlington.
Yeah, good morning, y'all. It's a shame that people like Mitt Romney have been positions of making decisions for us. I mean, here's a man who obviously was successful in business that all of a sudden, since he's become a senator, doesn't seem to understand data. There's audits that show that there was all kinds of misgoings on in the different states and different counties concerning the counts. So, I mean, what happened to Mitt Romney? I mean, does he hates President Trump and the people who voted for him more than he wants to do what's right for the country?
Well, here's the thing,
Trump support
Marvin. Well, it's not about hate for Mitt Romney. I mean, remember who Mitt Romney is. I'm always amazed that even on our side, people's short-term memory or lack of short-term memory, actually. Mitt Romney started in Michigan, was governor of Massachusetts, where he embraced the state version of Obamacare, and then runs for president, then moves to Utah for an open Senate seat, so he wires a deal to follow Orrin Hatch. This is a guy who's been seeking political office, you know, per his father growing up in that environment, yeah, his entire life. Go make money and then come back and secure an office and you can be one of the elder statesmen of America. That's what this has always been about. It's always been about Mitt Romney and having the honorific of an office. And so look at Mitt Romney's position on abortion from when he was governor of Massachusetts to when he was the presidential candidate a couple times and ultimately the nominee in 2012. Why is anybody surprised by Mitt Romney? If you're surprised by Mitt Romney, then you're not paying attention. And you should pay attention because Please Clap Republicans like Mitt Romney are enemies inside the perimeter. And I'm not just talking about enemies inside the perimeter of the Republican Party. I'm talking about enemies inside the perimeter of people who believe in free minds and free markets. And oh, by the way, those Please Clap Republicans are trying to advance a deal by this Democrat Socialist administration that, among other things, supersizes the IRS.
Oh, boy.
The deal is counting on $100 billion in new revenue by supersizing the Internal Revenue Service so it can audit millions of more Americans each year. Because the IRS...
That's what we need. Yeah.
The IRS really deserves a bump after the corruption at IRS that went unpunished during the Obama terms 1 and 2. The agreement proposes to lavish $40 billion more on the IRS. $40 billion more. The IRS budget for fiscal 21 is $12 billion. So adding $40 billion would increase it by more than a third... over 10 years. Well, by more than 3x over 10 years. The explicit goal is to squeeze $100 billion in additional tax revenue without changing the tax laws. That's what those Please Clap Republicans are working on, a bipartisan deal to advance. Mike on the north side.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Dan, I have to disagree with you. I don't think the only reason or the main reason blue-collar union workers like myself vote Republican is because of class envy. I think it's because we realize how utterly corrupt and inept the Democratic Party is at all levels. Washington, Springfield, Chicago. You couldn't run a work crew like that, let alone a business. And they just destroy everything, and they can't be trusted. And they're liars and they're mean. Just look at over the weekend. You had 6 Republican senators appear with President Biden attempting to be bipartisan. When did you see 6 Democratic senators appear with Donald Trump? Never. Never. They're just bitter, mean people that want to steal. And I think there's an old saying that says the blood of freedom has to be refreshed with the tree of freedom has to be refreshed with the blood of tyrants. We have to think about that. We have to get rid of now. I'm not saying we murder people, but we have to get rid of this whole political class and start over.
Thanks for the call, Mike. For clarification, $12 billion is the IRS's budget for fiscal 2021, adding $40 billion, but it's over $40 billion over 10 years. So at the end of 10 years, this deal, as the Wall Street Journal reports, the IRS's budget would increase by a third. And that's something that Please Clap Republicans are trying to salvage. They're working with the Biden administration to try and salvage this after the Biden administration can't figure out what their position is on their own proposal, on their own negotiations as it pertains to this bipartisan compromise deal. Remember, when politicians in both parties are coming together to do something in a bipartisan spirit, that's when you should be really afraid. That's when you should be really afraid. All this bipartisanship. It's supposed to be a fight because you're supposed to believe in different things. You're supposed to have different base philosophies that lead you to different policy choices. But not with these Please Clap Republicans.
This is the morning show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. The two mass shootings, one in South Shore, one in Marquette Park last night, bring the violence tally over the weekend to 67 shot and 4 dead.
And there were the one in Marquette Park when paramedics arrived. People were indiscriminately shooting at the paramedics. So then they had to do an emergency plan, too, and all these police officers had to come to protect the paramedics who were treating the injured. It is a blank show out there, and Mayor Lightfoot knows it.
She doesn't know it because on Friday she said that crime is actually on the decline.
Crime is not out of control in our city. In fact, crime is on the decline. All of our major indices showed a decline in crime, and our homicides and our shootings year over year are down.
David Brown, Superintendent Brown, did the same thing last week by just pinpointing one weekend compared to the weekend before. So Father's Day weekend, 75 were shot in 2020 and only 46 were shot. But then the numbers were actually, I'm like, no, your chart's wrong. We had 65 shot. He's like, no, we cut off the time at midnight.
Yeah, it's
like,
fun with numbers. Yeah. Right. It's arbitrary to tell the story they're trying to tell. So they cherry pick the data. Of course. What else is new? They cherry pick data with crime. They cherry pick data with COVID. They cherry pick data with finances. If you believe anything, take anything at face value that is offered by Triple Threat or Jelly Belly or any of these Democrat socialists, then you deserve what you get, which in this place is the worst governed city in America in the worst governed state in American history. That's what the actual data tells you. The complete data, the full picture, not shining a light in one corner of the room to the exclusion of the rest of the room. So it's interesting, the timing of that. So year over year, homicides and shootings are down. Uh-huh. I'm sorry. So, Mayor, year over year, you're comparing how we're doing so far halfway into 2021 to last year when you had two riots in the city. Is that what you're doing?
89 police officers injured outside the Columbus statue.
So 2020, here's the data year over year. So you want to do that comparison. 792 murdered, 4,174 shot. 2021 so far, 343 murdered, 1,900 shot. So, yeah, you're tracking slightly ahead of one of the most violent years in the last 30 in Chicago and in America, where you saw 50% increases in shootings, 30% increases in homicides. As compared to 2019, the year you took office. I'm sure there's some enterprising member of the Chicago Press Corps who will point all this out to Triple Threat at the earliest opportunity. Yeah, right. That would take, 5 seconds of due diligence. 2019, 519 murdered, 2754 shot, and that went to, you just heard, 792 and 4,174 in 2020. But year over year, year of utter chaos, summer of lawlessness, non-prosecution of thugs, which persists, oh, we're slightly behind that pace from last year. And we're not out of June yet, by the way. Oh, and when it comes to carjackings, oh, we're ahead of even last year. We're on the precipice of setting records. At current trends, the city will see 2,339 carjackings in 2021. Last year, a 20-year record, 1,413. Carjackings through this carjackings through June 16th are up 65% from last year, year over year, and 497% from 2015. And we talk about murder and clearing murder cases. Through 2021, June 16th of this year, 692 reported carjacking incidents, 47 arrests. That's 7% of carjacking incidents. Year over year. Why does it happen? Well, there's many reasons. One of them is that prosecution culture we have. On May 15th, police arrested John Daniels, 19 years old, for Saturday afternoon carjacking of a 59-year-old man in Buena Park. He had two accomplices, including an 11-year-old. One of them punched the victim in the face several times, breaking his left orbital bone, demanded his keys. It was Daniels' second carjacking arrest this year. May 15th, they also arrested him on February 3rd for carjacking a 28-year-old man in Westtown. The man in Westtown, this is one of the other reasons. The man in Westtown refused to press charges because he, quote, felt sorry, unquote, for Daniels.
Oh, my God.
The culture here, the political culture here.
So his judicial judgment is being clouded by how his feelings are? He felt sorry for him?
This is the victim.
The victim. Yeah, I'm saying.
So, the 28-year-old in Westtown, I'd love the opportunity to ask him, do you still feel sorry for him after he and his friends beat up that 59-year-old man 2 months later and stole his car?
Or what about 37-year-old Ayala? He was arrested this weekend for shooting a tourist last weekend. Not the stabbing. This is a separate case. A year before, he had an AK-47 loaded in his backseat of his car, and the judge let him off. And he never showed up for his let him off on an I-bond, and he never showed up for his trial.
Chicago police, going back to John Daniels, he's been arrested seven times since he was 18. He's 19. The two carjackings, as well as a back-of-the-yards assault, criminal trespassing at a back-of-the-yards McDonald's, disorderly conduct at a West Inglewood Foot Locker during the George Floyd riots, a loop theft, and criminal damage to property. Seven times in the last year, two carjackings, and I guess we'll see. I feel sorry for him, don't you? I don't feel sorry for the victims or those he will victimize if he's turned out again, because I'm like that woke dude in Westtown. I don't want to be a bad guy. He probably had a hard life. A lot of people have a hard life. Very few of them become violent criminals. Moron in Westtown. Leonard Johnson, 22 years old. He was arrested in April for a Lincoln Park carjacking, his eighth arrest since his 18th birthday, including previous charges of battery, criminal trespassing, theft, robbery of a man at the Red Line Grand Avenue L station. He was on parole from that. Mm-hmm. But Lightfoot says corporations are locating their businesses here. Chicago's open up. You go into your favorite restaurant or retail outlet, and you may find a $250 gift card if you say open Chicago to the proprietor. Everything's a game show because it's all fun. And we all dress up in our costumes, and we go over the cliff together. But we have a hell of a time doing it. Thelma and Louise style. Yay!
Jeff, and real quickly, we're focusing on the wrong thing. I mean, city council is talking about renaming Lakeshore Drive.
Jean,
there's so many or other pressing matters.
That's what they focused on. Jean-Baptiste pointed to Sable Lakeshore Drive to you, Miss Jacobson.
Well, you're the one who's going to have to change your address.
Yeah, right.
Five high-rises have to change their address now.
Yeah.
But you're not going to get your mail.
Fine.
Please.
I won't get my mail then. Jeff in Cal City.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Amy, I had a question for you. Next time you're at a press conference with Lori Lightfoot, is there any way you can ask her how it feels to be the mayor of the most violent administration in Chicago's history?
Okay. I'll ask her.
Well, thanks for the call,
Jeff.
And you
know what the answer is going to be.
She's going to deny it.
She's going to deny it and then repeat what she just said.
You have to say what I said. You said that year over year it's down. Oh, year over year. You took office in 2019. Here's the data. You want to cherry pick data and pretend we're all suckers? You need to come at her as hard as she comes at you. I'm talking about the collective you. She's always, you know, whipping her tiny little dink out and you know, brandishing it around like she's the baddest ass on the block. And she's a little punk. She's a little monster is what she is.
She's going to go have a scotch and a steak, Dan.
False bravado to cover incompetence. We've seen it with tiny mayors before, and we're seeing a new iteration with this tiny mayor. Daily, tiny dancer, triple threat. It's the same scam. Does anybody ever pick up on it? Well, not that 28-year-old moron in Westtown. We know that. Mike in Union.
I felt bad for him. Oh, my God.
Hey, good morning. I think you're missing it. I think that maybe one of the reporters should ask when they're going to start, like, a spaghetti dinner. What was it, in Seattle or Portland or whatever, and declare a summer of love. And then, you know, everything's going to be okay after that, Dan.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Just have a great day.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Yeah. Maybe we should do like a peace walk down Jean Baptiste, Pointe du Sable, Lakeshore Drive, head over to wherever they're considering a George Floyd statue.
Right. Maybe rename Millennium Park.
Have a drum circle.
They were thinking about changing Millennium Park or Maggie Daly Park to Jean Hall.
Yeah. We have,
but they settled on Lakeshore Drive.
We need to. It's just community programming and anti-violence facilitators. That's what we don't have enough of. Jim on the South Side.
Hello. I'm a retired police officer from Chicago, and one of the things that you're not mentioning when you say statistics, they've been 18 years old, they've been arrested 6-7 times since they're 18. You get caught maybe 2-4% of the times when you commit a crime.
Yeah.
So you add 94% or so to those statistics, you know, see what the actual crime rate is of these alleged offenders since they've turned 18.
Good point. Thanks for the call, Jim. Appreciate it. I was talking to this guy during our rain delay at Oak Park Country Club over the weekend, and he's saying he was in his breakfast joint. He lives in River Forest, breakfast joint somewhere on the near west side. And he sees three cops in there, and he just goes up to him and says, you know, hey, guys, I just want to say thanks for what you do. I know it's brutal out there. And one of the cops says, yep, you're on your own. And the other two cops say, come on, you know, dude, you can't say that. You can't say that. And the guy says, look, I'm just trying to be honest with him. We appreciate what you said, but that's where it is right now.
Holy cow.
That's encouraging. Tony in Downers Grove.
Dan, I know it's about Chicago, but I wanted to bring this up. There was a shooting in St. Charles, downtown St. Charles. It's a nightclub, 2 a.m. in the morning. So I looked at a few articles. Finally, I found one of the people found shot dead, died on. He was on the sidewalk. He was shot.
It was a bloody mess.
I finally found his name. Sure enough, 2017, in DeKalb, he was related to a couple shootings. Was arrested. So the question is, it's not the gun control. It's what was this kid doing up until this point? Clearly, he must have done more up to this point. He just wasn't getting shot outside a nightclub in St. Charles for no reason.
Mm-hmm. Well, St. Charles, we had a shooting in Naperville. crime is coming to this. Crime is in the suburbs right now, guys. Welcome to your new lives.
Well, crime has been in the suburbs.
Right, but I'm just saying there was a shooting in St. Charles. There was one in Naperville. The guy was caught, but still, it's...
Yeah, thanks for the call, Tony. Yeah, right. I mean, it's more... It's not limited to Chicago, this poisonous philosophy with respect to peace on the streets, meaning we're going to feel sorry for violent predators. Or we're going to say white privilege is what made him do it, or whatever it is that Kim Fox thinks. And all of the other identitarians like her. The 28-year-old dude in Westtown who didn't want to press charges against the carjacker. And the whole span of ruling class politicians in the city and state. Well,
can he press charges now, by the way?
They don't steal those offices under a cover of darkness. They get elected. Greg in Jefferson Park.
Hey, good morning, guys. Yeah, they get elected, and those people deserve everything they get or don't get in this case. You know, Lightfoot talks about bringing companies here. You know, I think Amazon has gotten close to or over $1 billion now for in tax incentives for all these warehouses that they put in the state. And it's just ridiculous. You know, you got this TIF money. I mean, here in Jefferson Park, our new alderman, Jim Gardner, is talking about putting AstroTurf in Wilson Park to make it a soccer field. And there's absolutely no parking anywhere near Wilson Park for people to be able to do that. So all the people who live near the park are going to get screwed with all these people that are going to be moving to this stuff. And Gardner talks about, oh, you got to use this money or it'll go away. It's like it doesn't go away. It's in a slush fund. You can use it 3 years from now. But once again, we got a guy lying to us. And, of course, he has a community meeting on Zoom because he ain't got the nuts to do it live in person. It's ridiculous, man. This city is going to hell, and it's getting worse day by day. Have a good one.
Thanks, Greg.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. One of the grand accomplishments of your duly elected General Assembly here in Illinois was the REACH Act to promote awareness and healthy attitudes about gender identity, gender expression, sexual orientation, kindergarten through 12th grade. Wonderful.
Oh, yeah. They are brainwashing children.
Comprehensive sex ed in kindergarten through second grade must include instruction on the following topics: human anatomy, gender roles, and varying family structures. Kindergarten.
As I was going to say, they're telling them that, you know, even though you're a boy, Sammy, you might be a girl. So they're brainwashing them and trying to convince them that they can change genders.
Comprehensive sex ed in third grade through fifth grade. Were you going to say something? Must include information about diverse sexual orientations, gender identities, gender expressions, and an examination of the harm caused by gender role stereotypes. Mm-hmm. That's in Illinois. Comprehensive sex ed must include discussion about sexting with 8 to 10-year-olds.
Oh. Well, they shouldn't even have phones, but okay, yeah.
Comprehensive sex ed may not use stigmatizing or shame-based instructional tools or stigmatize parenting or sexually active youth. May not employ gender stereotypes. You know, gender stereotypes. So, birthing people, men can man straight, because you don't want to get into stereotypes. The idea only boys have penises? Stereotype!
Only women could give birth? Stereotype. I'm surprised we haven't done away with Father's Day and Mother's Day and just call it parenting days.
Mm-hmm. It's all funny and it's just a head shaker and it's what the heck are they going to do next? Until you have a young girl like the young girl at the Hamilton Southeastern Schools in Indiana step to the podium during a school board meeting and convey the implications of this sort of indoctrination. For those scoring in the Hoosier State, Hamilton Southeastern Schools, the Noblesville and Fishers area of Indiana.
I have been in counseling as long as I can remember because I was adopted from foster care at age 4. The things I have learned along the way are being challenged now when my science or math teacher is trying to teach me how to be emotionally. And why are they teaching me about sexuality and how to identify? I don't want to hear about sexuality during class in front of other students because that should be a private thing. This should be left in the homes, in between students and counselors or one-on-one conversations. This has been a very traumatic part of my past, and the more the school focuses on sexuality, the more it affects me and my anxiety. It leaves confusion and frustration in my mind, and I don't know how to deal with that because they only focus on more content I feel heard about. For example, I was told I have white privilege. How can a child born in an abusive drug and alcohol abuse home who lost her entire biological family that has experienced all forms of abuse and neglect be privileged? If you found a child at 15 months in a home with holes in the floor eating cat poop, would you consider them privileged? Just asking, because when I was told that, I was so upset I cried myself to sleep. We have to stop the stereotypes and bitterness towards groups because it gets us nowhere but divided. I have no friends and can say HSE again has failed me. They are trying to divide us into two groups instead of bringing us together as one. Every day I felt less and less valued as a student and failed every class this past year. Academics are not important here, only how we feel and making sure we learn about sexuality, political topics, and emotional topics that teachers may or may not be able to handle, especially with trauma children like myself. I'm happy to move on and begin a fresh start and hope that this next school will love me for me and challenge me to grow in areas that I'm good at. I just want people to love one another, and the way we are doing it is wrong. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
That's one brave child.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. But wait a second, it's not happening in K-12. It's not happening, that's what we're told. This is a critical race theory, since you mentioned it. That's a law school course. It's taught at some law schools. It's not happening at the K-12 level. The sexualization of children masquerading as sex education. That's to make America a place for all of us.
Well, CRT doesn't take into account that white people can have horrific lives and suffer just as much as other races. I mean, listen to what he said about what he's eating cat poop that holes in the floor. But it's very upsetting.
I know we got a lot on our plate at the schools. You got to get them open. You got to
get them demasked.
Yes, you got to have them stop promoting racism. And now you got to have them stop sexualizing your children. But I don't know. Maybe you have to do what apparently that young girl's parents are doing and get her out of that school district to another school district. Maybe that's what you have to do. Maybe you have to stand up regardless of what you do, whether the kid stays or goes, and tell people what time it is. The audience gave her a standing ovation. Where have they been? Why is she doing the dirty work? I mean, it's great that she came forward to tell what has happened to her, give her perspective. It's great. It's good that kids do that. It'd be good if the parents would follow suit. I don't know how many ways to say it, how many examples we have to give, but this is happening in a lot of places, but not enough. There's a lot of people stepping forward, but not enough. I mean, these fundraisers for anti-human trafficking groups, great. It's great. Wonderful. Go to a cocktail party, write a $500, $1,000 check, and, and I'm against human trafficking. Meanwhile, you have kids that are being preyed upon ideologically and psychologically at minimum at the school down the street, and you do nothing because you don't want to offend the same people who are at the cocktail party with you.
They're teaching sixth grade girls how to put on condoms for anal sex. That upset anybody? Would that get you going? Or try to join, if you live in Chicago, try to join your LSC so you have a say in the curriculum.
Oh, gosh. What a waste of time that is. I mean, honestly.
I'm running.
Yeah, and you.
And I probably won't get it, but I'm going to try.
Well, whatever. And if you did get it.
Well, at least I could try to be a part of the process, Dan. If I'm going to stay here, I'm going to have to fight.
I'm going to join the Politburo to see if I can get them to renounce communism.
All right, so again, I'm just banging my head against the wall.
You're banging your head against the wrong wall. That's what I would say. It legitimizes something that is illegitimate. And by the way, if you don't think that this is a cult, you say religion, I say cult, because it's a false religion. Cult.
I feel like people don't think enough about what future generations are going to think about them. And I don't mean like millennials worrying about what Gen Z thinks about side parts. There is a right side of history and a wrong side of history. We are always living through history, and I think a lot about what I'm going to say to my son and what I'm going to say to my grandkids when they come home and they say, Mom, where were you in 2020? There is going to be a right side of history and a wrong side of history. And there's not like a special place in history for people who say like, nah, I don't do politics. I don't like to pick a side. I stay out of it. When you stay out of it, you're on the wrong side.
Mm-hmm. That's basically a religious claim, what she's making there. It's not a historical one. And it's the same attitude that you have in the schools, which is teachers are activists. And they need to teach children to be activists, too. We heard it last week from that ghastly woman in who's a special ed teacher at Des Moines High School. Same thing. But it's not happening, they'll tell you. It's not real. Oh, okay. Well, one woman thinks it's real because she got a reel up and close, and she didn't like it. We Spa in L.A., one lady was enjoying her day spa.
Yeah.
And in the women's section, she saw some dude walking around with his junk out.
Yeah.
And she's not down for that.
We spa. So it's okay. I just want to be clear with you. It's okay for a man to go into the women's section, show his penis around the other women, young little girls underage. Your spa, we spa, condone that. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Like I asked. It's so he could stay there. He could stay there? What sexual orientation? I see a dick. It lets me know he's a man. He's a man. He is a man. He is not no female. He is not a female. He is not a female. Hold on. He is not a female, sweetie. Okay. Girls down there, other women who are highly offended for what they just saw. And you did nothing. Absolutely nothing. In fact, you sided with him. So We Spa is in agreement with men that just say they are a woman and they can go down there with their penis and get into the women's section. Is that what you're saying? What really? What law? What law? So women can go into the men's with their breasts. Okay. Yeah, you shouldn't. Yeah, I wouldn't come back either. Yeah, get your money back. You got a man with his penis come back. He's a woman. He ain't no woman.
I'm telling you.
Yeah, give her money back.
Are you talking about the transgender person?
There's no such thing as transgender. He has a okay. He has a penis. His penis is hanging out. Okay, no, I'm not one. Actually, I'm a woman who knows how to stand up and speak up for my right. As a woman, I have a right to feel comfortable without a man exposing himself. Okay? No, you go somewhere else.
It's like the Korean King Spa in Niles, where you don't have a choice, Dan. When you get into the spa area where you get the massage, you have to be naked. You can't wear a towel to cover up. Those are the rules. And I was thinking about it because I went to the Korean King Spa on Friday. I thought, my God, I wonder if there's going to be a man walking around here. And sure enough, that happened at the Wii Spa. Same thing, same setup, same layup, same rules in Los Angeles. And wait till it happens to you, or you're going to the bathroom, and there's a guy in the stall next to you struggling. Yeah. Okay. It's
okay.
Uncomfortable.
I'll just set aside your Korean spa experience in Niles.
The Wii Spa is the Korean. It's the same thing.
The LA thing. It's interesting on two fronts. One, it's great. It's great that you got a problem with dudes walking around pretending to be women, presenting themselves at a spa. Maybe you should think about that for school too.
Right.
Number one. Number two. That soy boy that came up to that woman you heard basically saying, hey, the guy with his junk out, I got a problem with that in the women's section. The guy, are you talking about transgender? and then she just read him the riot act. Good for her.
Good.
That's the same type of guy who doesn't press charges against a carjacker in Westtown that we were just talking about. Same deal. Same mentality.
He felt sorry for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Same mentality. And good for that woman for steamrolling right over him. Spare me your sentimental claptrap. Spare me. Well, whether it is an appeal based on trauma, like that young girl at the Hamilton, Hamilton Southeastern
Indiana.
Schools in Noblesville and Fishers, Indiana, or it's that woman, blown the roof off the joint at Wii Spa in L.A. I don't know. They're both good manifestations of standing and saying what is true. And
even the woke people, when it happens to them, then they're going to realize, oh, my God, what have I been doing?
No, they're not. You just hurt him. You just hurt him. This is a cult. It's a cult. You think they're going to get deprogrammed just because somebody slaps them with their appendage? In the locker room? No. This is a sickness because they're cultists. They've been programmed. And I'm talking about from a young age. Here's another proud cultist showing off the indoctrination of her toddler.
You don't know if someone is a boy or a girl. How come you call them they?
Because it don't assume gender.
Yeah, we don't assume gender. And what is gender?
What's gender?
Gender is... it's how society defines.
How society defines
boys and girls
and everything in between.
Better pray for that little girl.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Hey, guys.
Hi.
We're all friends here. U.S. Announcing yesterday it carried out a round of airstrikes against Iranian-backed militia in Iraq and Syria in response to drone attacks by the militia against U.S. personnel and facilities in Iraq. Whoa. Well, what did we do to cause this? How did we offend you? The Iranians are our friends. We got this nuclear deal we're resuscitating. Gave them a bunch of cash.
Yeah, we buy our friendships, yes.
Well, sure, especially the lead state sponsor of terror in the world. We just haven't made enough of an overture. The fig leaf not big enough. Is that the problem? Well, let's ask Lieutenant Colonel Jim Carafano, VP at the Catherine and Shelby Cullum Davis Institute for International Studies at the Heritage Foundation, author of Wiki at War, and the recently released Brutal War, Jungle Fighting in Papua New Guinea, 1942. Jim, what's going on with, a bunch of friends that normally get along so famously under surrender Democrats?
Yeah, am I sensing a degree of sarcasm?
No. You picked up on it?
Just,
wow.
I know. So it was so subtle.
Very subtle.
Here's the problem. From day one of the Biden administration, which is really kind of incredible considering they went through this in the Obama administration and they're literally committing the same errors on the ball field, which is you're negotiating a deal with the Iranian regime on the Iranian regime's terms, how is that ever going to end well? And, I mean, the Iranians are so disdainful. And this actually makes perfect sense from an Iranian perspective. And you have to understand this. In this part of the world, honor is power. You are respected if you are a powerful person. And if you are not, you are weak and humiliated. So it's important for the Iranians not just to get the Americans back into the deal, but to get the Americans back into the deal in the most humiliating way possible. So it's very clear who is powerful here in the region and who needs to be respected. And so continuing to conduct terrorist attacks against the United States is essential. And then for the United States to kind of, you know, ping back is meaningless to the Iranians. They could care less if a couple of Iraqi militia get blown away. Mm-hmm. That's irrelevant to them. As long as the United States is obsequiously still trying to do a deal with them, they still are in the strong side of the power relationship. Now, if the Biden administration had not only done an attack, but then immediately announced they were suspending negotiations with Iran, that would have got the Iranians' attention. But really what we actually are doing, even though we're defending ourselves, you know, ironically, we're actually demonstrating weakness to the Iranians and we're emboldening them.
And did we warn people that we are coming to lessen the number of casualties?
I don't know that. You know, typically we do these things at night when nobody's around in order to avoid civilian casualties. You know, there was a famous incident where the Iranians shot down a U.S. Unmanned drone, and Trump decided not to retaliate. And his argument was, look, we're not going to send any message to the Iranians. We're going to bomb something at night. Nobody's going to be there, and they're going to care less about that. Because if, you know, if I'm going to strike the Iranians, they're going to know it and they're going to feel it, and it'll be a true instrument of deterrence. Like when they took out Soleimani, yes. That got their attention.
Yeah, I'd say. That's a nice example in furtherance of distinguishing between the two administrations. Continuing on that idea, China, and Ezra Klein, he's one of the deep intellects of the left, as I'm told, over at Vox.com. He recently said in his podcast that you build some of that into TikTok. They're trying to make you like China more, which maybe is not even the worst thing. We've had propaganda efforts in this country forever trying to make people like America more. Why not use your algorithm on your free video app to serve up things that improve cross-cultural communication, right? Because that's what the Chinese communists are into, just a cross-cultural exchange of ideas. And boy, that observation from deep thinker Ezra Klein did not hold up too well as of last week when the outlet founded by the heroic Jimmy Lai, Apple Daily, the pro-democracy newspaper in Hong Kong, was forcibly shut down. And frankly, nary a word from the Biden administration about that rather momentous occurrence, given the founder's profile in Hong Kong and China over, well, since Tiananmen Square. Biden administration on that event and on China as we stand more generally?
Well, the fact that the Chinese felt so compelled to do this, I think, says something. What are they afraid of? The fact that they have to shut down a tabloid newspaper. Well, I think they're demonstrating their raw, uncontrolled power, and they want people to fear them. But also, it demonstrates that they actually fear truth, and that's their weakness and a weapon we should use against them. Does this administration get it? No, I think it actually reflects Ezra's kind of notion, which is we should not try to poke the Chinese dragon. The most telling thing to me is when Americans are increasingly upset about the origins of the COVID virus and really want answers, the president came out and said a couple of things. He said, well, we will insist, you know, we agree Americans should have answers, blah, blah, blah. We will insist that the WHO do a thorough investigation, which he knows they will not do. We insist that the Chinese cooperate, which he knows they will not do. And we will review the intelligence that we've collected, which we know will tell us nothing new. The President of the United States basically told Americans, he will forcefully look after their interests by doing three things that he absolutely knows won't work. Now, what kind of message do you think the Chinese, and for that matter, the American citizens, take away from that?
Mm-hmm. Well, sticking on that, and since you mentioned the origins of the virus, a researcher who studies viral evolution at the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center in Seattle did a report. It's not peer-reviewed yet, but he suggests that the viruses that caused COVID-19 did not originate at the Wuhan seafood market because of this identification of deleted gene sequences from the virus's earliest days. They had been posted to a website run by NIH, but were removed for unknown reasons. This is consistent with, you know, I mean, Brett Weinstein, even before that, who's an evolutionary biologist, said 95% of it came from the lab. But this is really something specific. Gene sequences that were identified by this researcher named Jesse Bloom and were removed by NIH for unknown reasons. Maybe there's a legitimate reason, but there certainly is a question that needs to be answered.
Well, I think this goes back to the whole politicization of the COVID virus and how both the Biden administration and the mainstream media really weaponized it for a political purpose, which is to fight back against the president. I mean, clearly, Biden and his campaign adapted a narrative on COVID, which was designed for political ends, not to get to the truth of COVID. And he was aided and abetted by the press and social media, which began excluding, demonizing, and sexually suppressing alternative information. So this really had a chilling effect. And you ask yourself, the kind of research that this person has done, and it has to be verified and all that, but all that probably would have started way earlier if people weren't scared, humiliated, afraid, you know, convinced that there was nothing worth looking into. This is what's a reminder of why freedom of expression and freedom of the press and freedom of thought and inquiry is so important, because the suppressing of debate and search and controversy inhibits the gaining and knowledge of information, and this is a great example of that.
Yeah, but who convinced the mainstream media to go along with this? I mean, I was brainwashed too for a while with all story after story of a man got it from animal to human jump.
And well,
how did they get to them to force that on them? That's what I don't understand.
Yeah, look, I mean, in fairness, zoonotic transmission, human beings getting it from either a wild or domesticated animal is a common method of transmission. So it's not an unreasonable conclusion based on the limited information that we had. But there's a difference between saying, well, what's logical based on the limited information we have, and what's possible if we actually investigate further. And the problem was we skipped step two. Because the President of the United States said, this is China's fault. His presidential opponent was committed to saying, no, it's not China's fault. And the press, like little lemmings, and social media, essentially adopted that same mantra. There's no logical reason why the president should be suspended from social media platforms. There is no logical reason why people should have censored debate about the origins of the virus, that's not even medical information in the sense that's going to affect, how people respond individually. Okay, it's not like people were putting out like phony medical treatments or something. And those two acts alone were, I think, really, really good examples of oppression of free speech, and it had a detrimental effect, and people were actually wrong. And it's not like, oh, we made a mistake. I mean, I could get that. Oh, we're sorry. Every major attack on the last administration and every major news story where if Trump thinks it's right, we all know it's wrong, has proven out either completely or largely false. Every one of them, over 4 years, it's an unbroken record. If you could play like that in the major leagues, you'd be in the World Series. They were wrong every single time. And to me, what the biggest concern here, our government's learned nothing. I mean, Biden and Harris go out today and lie to people's faces and continue to do that and hope they have an obsequious press that won't push back. And we still have the same behavior from the press. And look, they're still doing things like banning the president from social media outlets, even though all the reasons that they banned him have proven demonstrably false.
Last week, you made what I thought was a really strong statement about the senior leadership of the U.S. military, speaking of somebody who served our country for 25 years in the Army, and saying it's, you know, the weakest in memory, has in your memory, has no understanding of the political landscape or ability to operate in the political landscape as it currently exists. K.T. McFarland, we had on the show a couple of days later, agreed with you wholeheartedly. And I thought that was a strong statement. And then after Mark Milley, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley, testified on the Hill last week, I thought it was an understatement. After Admiral Gilday and General Austin, but Army General Mark Milley, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, I've read Mao, I've read Karl Marx, I've read Lenin. That doesn't make me a communist in defending his promotion of Henry Rogers, a.k.a. Ibram Kendi. I mean, this guy, I know he's got big titles and he's a general and we're supposed to defer to people who've served our country and ascended to such heights. But, I mean, he presented himself as a pseudo-intellectual asshat, as far as I'm concerned, on the Hill. And his moral indignation didn't, may have fooled members of Congress, but it didn't fool me. And I wanted to get your reaction to him.
Well, I mean, that was a completely nonsense statement. I was taught communism at West Point. I read Karl Manifesto. I taught the Russian Revolution and Marx and Lenin at West Point. I taught it in the history department. I taught it because people should understand it. I did not teach it as indoctrination. And he damn well knows that the introduction of books like Anti-Racism are not meant to understand the culture debate in America today. They're designed as indoctrination to convince people that they are wrong and they need to overturn the political and cultural and social order of America today. He is providing, in his testimony last week, that was very clearly cover for the Biden administration, which has endorsed critical race theory, which is in itself a racist theory, which if actually implemented under U.S. law, would actually violate civil liberty laws. And he knowingly did that. And that is the definition of the wrong action of a senior military leader, to provide political cover for a political leader for political purposes. So that was, I think, the confirmation that we have senior military leaders which are literally failing us every day, because all they are doing is, rather than providing military advice, rather than providing honest, which are actually required under the Constitution, honest answers to members of Congress, they're literally become delivering administration political talking points.
The book, Brutal War, Jungle Fighting in Papua New Guinea, 1942, Lieutenant Colonel Jim Carafano. Jim, thanks as always.
When generals spoke their mind. All right, gotta go.
There you go.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Please clap. Republican Senator Mitt Romney was on with Jake Tapper over the weekend, responding to the Trump rally in Wellington, Ohio on Saturday night. And they've got a nice little vaudeville act that they do where they recite the lines. Jake Tapper says the Maricopa County audit is absurd and it's a continuation of the big lie. And then Mitt Romney says, I agree, Jake. It's undermining our democracy and the case for democracy the world over. Somehow everyone's going to adopt the autocratic model of China if anybody asks any questions about the 2020 election. It's a bizarre argument, but let Mitt Romney make it.
Well, I do think it's important for each person to speak the truth and to make clear that the big lie is exactly that. I can tell you that it is surely being used around the world. to minimize the support for democracy. I mean, there is a battle going on in the world right now between the autocratic nations like China and Russia and nations that believe in democracy. And if the autocratic nations can point to the United States, which is the birthplace, really, of this modern democracy, and can say, look, they can't even run an election there that's not fraudulent. How can you possibly run it in your country? That obviously is having an impact on the cause of democracy and freedom around the world. But I also think, frankly, Jake, that here in the U.S., there's a growing recognition that this is a bit like WWF, that it's entertaining, but it's not real. And I know people want to say, yeah, they believe in the big lie in some cases, but I think people recognize that it's a lot of show and bombast, but it's going nowhere. The election is over. It was fair.
Well, a lot of people disagree with Mitt Romney. That's why he himself said not so long ago he represents a tiny wing of the party. Indeed, he does. 2.2 million people didn't tune in to watch Mitt Romney on State of the Union. They did to watch Trump in Wellington, Ohio. But the argument that he makes, which sounds very high-minded, that needs to be addressed. Oh, you know, it's undermining democracy the world over. So let me understand something. The idea that we have an election, the incumbent president says it was fraudulent, it was stolen, and yet he is forced to leave office in favor of the person who is recorded as having gotten the most electoral votes in our system, and that he can continue making a case, continue asking questions. Legislators and election officials in some states can continue looking into it, and yet we continue on as a nation. That undermines democracy? If it's just a fishing expedition, Jake and Mitt, then why not let them fish? All of the weight is on the shoulders of those making claims that have yet to be substantiated. So if your position is so strong, you should welcome all comers to its challenge, shouldn't you? For more on this, pleased to be joined by our friend Andy McCarthy, former Chief Assistant U.S. Attorney in the Southern District of New York, that would be Manhattan, contributing editor at National Review, author of the bestseller Ball of Collusion, The Plot to Rig an Election and Destroy a Presidency. Andy, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Do I have that right, this undermining democracy argument? Is that, do you agree with me or do you agree with Mitt?
No, well, I don't agree. Certainly don't agree with Mitt. And I do agree with your point that, you know, there's nothing that's threatening to the system by allowing this to go on. I mean, I'm sympathetic to the claim that a lot of it's a clown show. And if Democrats try to do what Republicans or Trump supporting Republicans are trying to do in Maricopa County, we'd be going ballistic because it really doesn't have any credibility as a fact-finding mission. It's so obviously partisan, and they're so obviously in the tank for Trump that even if they came up with something, it wouldn't have any credibility, especially after the Republican-led government there, you know, checked it and rechecked it. But there's nothing that says that they shouldn't be able to do it. I then just don't like all the democracy rhetoric, because I think ultimately, particularly for conservatives, it's really it's so ill-informed, and it's ultimately it erodes what our system really is, which is not a democracy, it's a republic. And this whole idea that we have to have every single person conceivably possibly vote, and that it's your duty to vote, and we have to make it as easy as possible for you to vote, and therefore we have to undermine anything remotely approaching election integrity in the interest that even people who are utterly uninformed about public policy should go out and vote. I think it would be horrifying. The framers didn't like and were very suspicious of democracy. Anybody who ever read the Federalist Papers would know that they traced the history of democracies up to that point in the 18th century and noted that it was a disastrous history. So the last thing the framers were for was what Romney seems to be talking about, which is this idea of a pure democracy. That's not our system.
Well, undermine, forget undermine with respect to attack anything that would place any sort of fraud protection on the electoral process.
Right.
And you wrote about it, National Review. DOJ suing the state of Georgia over their election integrity law, which actually has reduced barriers to legitimate voting, according to some measures in Georgia.
Yeah, I think that 5 minutes ago, the country was you were supposed to show up physically, identify yourself to the satisfaction of the poll people, which are bipartisan, so that's not a concern, and vote if you wanted to. You're under no obligation to, but they had to allow that. And I think a lot of the rhetoric around this is just completely ignorant. There is no federal right to vote. You know, they keep talking about our right to vote. The Constitution puts the states in charge of that, and you know, they can give you the right to vote or not. Every state has, as they should. But the idea is, if it's in, you know, there's places in the world where they would crawl over broken glass to be able to get to a polling place and be allowed to vote. I really don't think it's an imposition on people to show up, physically identify themselves, and cast a vote in the polling place where it's the most secure way of voting. And then you have, as we've always had, a narrow avenue for not showing up to vote, for doing it by mail or at a different time in the polling place for people who either had physical disabilities or they had work reasons that didn't allow them to vote on election day. And I'd also be fine with it if we have now such a big country that we ought to have election day go on for 2 or 3 days rather than try to cram everybody in on one day. That's okay with me. But this idea that, you need to make voting as easy as getting your email and that everybody should be registered to vote whether they want or not, and you should extend the time to vote for weeks and weeks to the point where it's absurd to think that you could possibly protect the integrity of that. I think we lose that battle when we lose the overall battle when we start to say that all of this stuff needs to be accommodated. I think we ought to get back to the idea that presumptively you're supposed to show up physically and vote.
Yeah. We also seem to be losing the idea that the Department of Justice is independent. For all the caterwauling about Bill Barr, as evidenced by his Atlantic interview with Jonathan Carl, was not one to do Trump's bidding just because he was the president. That seems to contrast from Merrick Garland with this suit against Georgia that alleges the state legislature in Georgia, with their election reform law, intended to deny or abridge the right of black Georgians to vote, quote unquote.
Yeah, well, you know, look, Georgia's voting law is now more liberal than a lot of the laws that were already on the books, right? The states, I think it's a more liberal voting law, for example, than New York's.
And
so
Delaware.
I guess we can't have the All-Star game at the Yankee Stadium anymore, right? But, I think the Obama administration, the Biden, there's a Freudian slip.
The yeah. Joe Bama, that's what Dan calls it.
601, half dozen.
The Joe Bama.
Yes.
But when Garland was testifying, and I had higher hopes for Garland. I knew Garland in the 90s, and he was he's a very fine Justice Department official. And I think he's the best you could have hoped for from a Biden administration from a conservative standpoint. But it's been obvious since he started that the Biden Justice Department is Obama 2.0, mm-hmm. which is simply putting the might of the government's law enforcement powers in the service of the woke progressive agenda. And, you know, what Garland said at the beginning was his big priority was the Capitol riot, because he said it represented the greatest threat to democracy in his lifetime. Now, this is a guy who was a top Justice Department official in the 1990s when jihadists killed hundreds of Americans. That's how I got to know Garland. And he personally supervised the Oklahoma City bombing where 168 people were killed.
And he now says that the Capitol riot is the worst, is on a par with 9/11, is a terrorist, like a terrorist attack. I mean, really? Yeah. You can't look at the Capitol riot and say this was wrong and it shouldn't have happened and the people who did it ought to be, you know, prosecuted to the extent it's appropriate to prosecute them. But at the same time, understand that this wasn't an insurrection and it wasn't a terrorist attack. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Well, Andrew McCarthy, I wanted real quickly, the Department of Justice lawsuit against Georgia, what's going to happen with it?
Well, it depends, Amy. If they get a progressive judge, you know, there's a lot of Obama judges out there, as we saw during the Trump administration. And if they're going to litigate it in D.C., there's a fair number of them. So if that's where it gets filed, they may even win the first round. But, you know, ultimately, I think the case will end up in the Supreme Court and it'll get laughed out of court.
With respect to the Supreme Court, sticking in the courts, but taking one step up, a couple steps up, if we're talking about district court, Senator Whites Only, he used to be known as White House there from Rhode Island, is demanding all documents, including memoranda and correspondence containing information related to trips outside of D.C. for Supreme Court justices who've had a security detail over the past decade. He suggests, Senator Whites Only, that this is just, you know, doing his fiduciary responsibilities, his oversight responsibilities as an august senator. Others see this as continuing his public campaign to try to intimidate Supreme Court justices who might rule in cases contrary to leftist orthodoxy. How do you view this?
I think it's an appropriate thing if the Senate wants to look into it. It would seem to me that the Senate would have a pretty full plate. And if I was there, I would think that if we had, you know, 10 things that we needed to do, that would rank about, you know, 174th on the list. But, you know, there's nothing. Look, part of the job of Congress is to conduct oversight of the other branches. And sometimes it's very obviously appropriate oversight. Yeah. And sometimes it's political harassment. This is probably in the political harassment category, but you can't say they don't have the power to do it.
No.
I'd be surprised if the White House gets, you know, support from a lot of the Senate to do this, but they're certainly allowed to do it.
Well, it's just interesting, you know, how some fishing expeditions are viewed versus others when the power to do it is the same. He is Andy McCarthy, former Chief Assistant U.S. Attorney, Southern District of New York. That's Manhattan. Contributing editor at National Review and author of the bestseller Ball of Collusion, The Plot to Rig an Election and Destroy a Presidency. Thanks for joining us, Andy.
And he joined us. Oh, yeah. Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Dan and Amy, important study from Columbia University Irving Medical Center, New York City. Listen up. A new small-scale study not only shows strong evidence that psychological stress is linked to the graying of hair, but that the process is reversible. You can actually de-stress your way back to your old hair color.
That's what, moving out of stressful cities like Chicago?
Well,
maybe they'll get your brown hair back, Dan?
Understanding the mechanisms that allow old gray hairs to return to their young pigmented states could yield new clues about the malleability of human aging in general.
Wow.
And how it's influenced by stress. Now, those who are older who might already have a full head of gray hair are likely to be out of luck no matter how much psychological stress they reduce in their lives. But it is possible that some hair follicles could be...
I see some gray there, and then a little here at the widow's peak.
It's just a little on the sides. It's very distinguished.
Yeah, but do you...
Like Mitt Romney.
Excuse me. You have some up here.
I mean, it's like a...
Well, you wear a baseball cap all the time, so you don't see it.
No, I see it. Excuse me. At least I'm not going to the dye house to, you know...
That's a Korean King spa.
Yeah, okay.
Where, by the way, you know what they have, what's new there?
Yeah,
they have steam, the JJ steamers. I was like, excuse me? And she said, we have a new item here.
How do we go
on
from
our map?
Is this somehow related to gray hair?
It could be.
Or did you just...
Because you could get gray hair anywhere.
Did you just need to get vagina steamers out because you were going to explode?
I'm just saying it's a new thing now.
Mm-hmm. And
And I didn't try it, but apparently it helps with cleansing of the area and some other things.
Well,
you know
that
what
could
I mean.
Be de-stressing, and while you're
while
that area is being taken care of, you get your natural hair color back on top.
That's what I was trying to say all along. Thank you for connecting the dots.
My pleasure.
As I speak in non sequiturs so beautifully.
My pleasure.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Thanks to shows like ours and the contributions of so many, the new Marxists are not able to operate under the radar like they'd like. Not able to gaslight people into believing, to not believing what they're seeing. President Trump mentioned critical race theory in the schools at his rally in Wellington, Ohio, Saturday night, and it got a resounding boo, which was good, not just because it was the right answer, but because it was recognized throughout that crowd. We've talked about and provided many instances of all of the manifestations of neo-Marxism in our culture at present. And of course, against the backdrop of the Olympics, that certainly would include gender identity. Quentin Tarantino gave an interesting interview over the weekend, a great director, Bill Maher's program, in which, among other things, in addition to discussing the whether or not he's only going to, or should really, only direct one more film, which is what he said, he had this to say about this moment in America.
There has become a thing that's gone on, it seems like, in this, especially this last year, where ideology is more important than art.
Way more, certainly to the awards.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, it's like, you know, ideology right. trumps art. Ideology right. trumps individual
terrible.
Effort. Ideology trumps good. Ideology trumps entertaining.
Yeah, there's two kinds of movies, virtue signalers and superhero movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Forget what Bill Maher said. Ideology trumps art. It trumps individual effort. It trumps excellence. It trumps biology. To wit, New Zealand weightlifter Laurel Hubbard at the Olympics. And I'll turn it over to our correspondent at large, J.P. Shears, for some comment on that.
After somehow dominating competitions recently, New Zealand weightlifter Laurel Hubbard is making very non-binary waves, as the Olympic Committee announced Laurel will be allowed to compete in women's weightlifting at the Olympics. And for some reason, some people who aren't indoctrinated into Marxism enough to disown objective truth think women's sports should be reserved for biological women. Only. That smells uninclusive to me. This just in! If you think women's sports should only be for biological women, then you're transphobic. So shut up! End of discussion. Forever. Most hysterical one wins. These people are likely the same ones that buy into the baseless conspiracy theories that humans have an immune system and that hormones make a difference in the body. When Laurel Hubbard was a man, the man that she was competing in weightlifting and impressively set a New Zealand junior national record in 1998. In the men's category. And this makes Laurel a perfect candidate for women's weightlifting, because she's starting on a very level playing field with the other women. How level? Well, Laurel is 43 years old, and she transitioned from biological male to non-biological female at 35 years old. So Laurel lived with a male's testosterone level for 35 years. While all other female competitors at the Tokyo Olympics will have lived with a male's testosterone level for exactly 0 years. Maybe worth noting, testosterone is the primary hormone responsible for strength, muscle growth, and bone density. Allegedly, all helpful things for weightlifting. What's the difference between men's and women's testosterone levels? Well, from an identity politics perspective, no difference. From a scientific perspective, based in reality, a big difference.
For a more reality-based discussion on this topic, we're pleased to be joined by Congresswoman Mary Miller. She's representative from Illinois' 15th, which is Southern Illinois. serves on the House Committee on Ag and the House Committee on Education and Labor. Representative Miller, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So you have taken up this issue of this ideology trumping biological science, trumping objective reality as part of your work in Congress. Explain what you're doing to try to advance the flag for reality.
Yes. Well, first of all, I want to tell the listeners that the Democrat Party has been taken over by leftist revolutionaries. And they do have plans to transform our country and our way of life. It is not a small possibility. It's a significant threat. And they're changing our culture by coercion and force. So recently, President Biden's education secretary, Cardona, put out under his leadership a resource. It was distributed to all public schools. It's a public document, and it's on his website. And it's called Confronting Anti-LGBTQI+ Harassment in Schools. And one of the examples he uses, or that they put on this paper, of harassment is a teacher telling students that two genders. So hearing last week, I asked him how many genders there are. And of course, he quickly deflected because he didn't want to answer it. And so I re-questioned him and he answered, I won't be asking your question. I'm just so concerned about the increase of radical gender ideology in our schools. I mean, our girls should feel safe in their private spaces, the bathrooms and the locker rooms. And I reminded him that he's on the wrong side of the issue. Americans do not want this in their schools. And this is going to be the end of girls' athletics, which is one reason that I proposed the Safety and Opportunity for Girls Act. And it's very common sense. It states that when sex is referred to in Title IX, it means biological and genetic. So, all the rest of us agree that there's two sexes. And I did ask him what he's going to do, what they're going to do about teaching biology in school also. That's another question I had. And another question I had for him was, what are they going to do if a student complains that she doesn't feel comfortable in a locker room with a male or a boy? I mean, is she going to be accused of harassment also? I mean, this is just going to create absolute chaos and put, our teachers and students in a really precarious position on this issue.
Well, Mary, did Education Secretary Cardona answer that question? Because it seems like if you just identify with what you're born with, you have no rights. So they're discriminating against us.
Exactly. That's what I said, because their thing is we need to protect people, which I have nothing, and I'm sure our listeners too, have nothing but sympathy for those that are struggling with gender confusion. But instead of offering the kids help, this department is planning to punish schools and teachers, and I'm guessing students that complain, anybody that is going to attempt to protect girls' privacy or support female sports. The majority of Americans disagree with this department's position.
Mm-hmm. And your husband, Chris, is a state rep, and he fought that fight at the state level and in the decided supermajority. That didn't go very well. But this is the same thing that's happening at the federal level is happening at the state level in Illinois through the REACH Act and this quote-unquote comprehensive sex ed, which is really the sexualization and politicization of sex and gender starting in kindergarten.
Well, and I'm a mom and a teacher, and I can tell you there's not enough time in the day to get to all the core subject material that you want to do. And that's the other problem with this, is they're, by, bringing in all these weird subjects, they're taking time away from the core subject matter. And I don't know how we could do this, but I think if they want to put these fringe educational experiences into the public school, I think instead of having parents opt their children out of them, I think parents should have to opt their children into them. Because by giving them the opt-out option, parents are always the last to know about what's going on. And this way, parents would have to know and say, yes, I want my kids to learn how to be a pervert and have bizarre sex when they're in first grade. But, I mean, this is crazy. I mean, our children are the greatest resource of our nation. And regular people like you and I, we're the ground troops. We need to show up at school boards, run for school board, find out what the curriculums are, and just show up at school and take your kids out of those classes.
Yeah, well, collectively, Illinois parents have failed miserably when it comes to protecting our kids. I mean, look at how we let the government roll all over us for these COVID, you know, draconian lockdowns, and nobody fought back. Just a handful of parents fought back. So how are we going to motivate other parents to get involved in this?
Well, I think people need to show up at the schools and demand from the superintendent and the school boards, what are you teaching? Now, I've talked to multiple teachers, regional superintendent of schools, and superintendents that are planning not to follow these directives. So it'll be interesting to see what's going to happen to these courageous leaders that are going to stand up. But I tell people, if you aren't willing to suffer now, I guarantee the suffering will be greater later, because these people are radical revolutionaries and they're going after our children.
At the federal level, then, Cardona, education secretary, and the Democrat socialists, they intend to tie federal funding to the adoption of these standards you were describing, I presume?
I'm sure that they will. And they want to make examples out of people. And I think people have to be ready for that to happen. I don't know if it's going to be me or you or whoever, but they're going to go after us. I mean, that's why they're you know, working in the military. They're militarizing the police. That's their goal. I keep telling my children and other people, these people aren't anti-police. They're anti-local police. And, I mean, they're trying to move their ideology forward on every front, but a couple things are in their way, thankfully, and there are great patriots out here, which, you know, people should be encouraged about that. The freshman class is a fantastic group that is, you know, hit the ground running and want to fight for our constitutional rights. The other thing that stands in their way is the Constitution, and the third amazing thing is the American people. The majority of American people believe that they've gone too far with everything. I mean, they're creating all these crises in our country. These are man-made crises. We've got them on every front. Economic, border crises, energy crises. I think we've seen nothing yet in light of our, energy costs going up. We're creating security crises by negotiating with terrorists. Crises in the school, crises with the police.
Just a quick political question you brought up, the freshman class of which you're a member. Any insights on what the congressional map is going to look like in Illinois and who's going to be left without a chair?
No, but I do believe that the Democrats don't care if they do end up in court over the maps, if they can get what they want in the next election, and they want to eliminate one or more seats. I think that they'll get the crayon out like a kindergartner and gerrymander these maps.
Oh, yes, for sure. We know that.
And Pritzker promised he wouldn't do that.
Representative Mary Miller, Illinois' 15th Southern Illinois House Committee on Ag and House Committee on Education and Labor. Representative Miller, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Janice v. AFSCME, an Illinois case. Mark Janice, former state employee, decided by the Supreme Court in 2018 and overturning a 1977 case, Abood, that allowed such union fees, the forcible collection of so-called fair share union fees, that was overturned by AFSCME, hailed by many, myself included, as a real seminal moment in not just jurisprudence on labor and unions, but also a seminal moment in terms of the politics and the political strength of public sector unions. You thought there would see attrition over the years that would really defang and minimize the dominance of public sector unions in particular states like Illinois. Is that really happening? I don't think it's happening on the pace that was hoped, and in part because the unions have been rather intransigent in giving up those fair share fees and really in complying with the spirit as well as the letter of the law. And so here we are litigating the matter again. National Right to Work is doing so on behalf of public school teachers in both Chicago and New Jersey, trying to extricate themselves from their unions, their respective teachers' unions. And for more on this, we're pleased to be joined by Mark Mix, president of National Right to Work Foundation. Mark, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Dan, good to be on with you again, and thanks for the opportunity. Yeah, 3 years ago yesterday, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that it was a violation of your First Amendment free speech rights to compel you to pay dues or fees to a union in order to work for your government. And yet today, we are continuing to fight that, even though the court ruled in their majority opinion that no worker could be fired, and secondly, that every worker had to give an affirmative waiver of their First Amendment rights. We've got another case going up to the U.S. Supreme Court asking them to hear the case of two Chicago teachers and two New Jersey teachers who were prohibited from exercising these rights by these so-called escape periods that you indicate the unions have put up, these kind of hurdles. They're not necessarily roadblocks, but they're definitely hurdles, and they're not interested in letting workers out, that's for sure.
Well, what can you tell us about the two Chicago public school educators, and what was their breaking point and why they wanted to separate from the union?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. As it relates to the two Chicago teachers, they were unaware of their Janice rights going into 2019. And in the fall, they heard rumors that the Chicago Teachers Union was going to call a strike in October. So they started doing some research. They found out about the Janice decision. They alerted the union they wanted to withdraw because what they wanted to do was continue teaching. They didn't want to go out on strike with Mr. Sharkey and the rest of them there. And they wanted to stay in the classroom. Well, they wrote their letters. They did everything right. The union ignored them until November after all of the hubbub had gone by and said that they couldn't get out for another year. And so it was going to be until September of 2020 that they could actually exercise their rights, even though the union didn't have the waiver and the teachers requested the opportunity to get out. So their two from Chicago, the two in New Jersey were more aware of Janice. In fact, it was July of 2018 where they wrote their letter saying get out, and they didn't know it. But the legislature, in order to limit the impact of Janice mentioned in the intro, they passed a piece of legislation that said there would be a 10-day window period, escape period, for these teachers, and they passed that in May, knowing that Janice was likely going to be the law of the land in June. And so when they did their process, they said, oh, well, you missed your 10-day window, and you can't get out, and you have to continue paying dues. So lots of litigation, but the principle is still in place, the First Amendment, and we are winning, Dan. It's certainly not as fast as we had hoped that the workers would exercise these rights and know about them, but they're still to be done.
And so the idea is that these contrived escape clauses, this is something that you want the court to weigh in on as well and declare inconsistent with Janice.
That's correct. And there's been several cases out there on this, and these are the kind of the first two to get up there that are specifically about the escape period. There's been other cases that have been petitioned to the court that have been, you know, denied that were about a whole host of matters, and there's lots of litigation on Janice now. And there are victories, Dan. There are, you know, literally thousands and thousands and thousands of workers have exercised their rights. Hundreds of thousands of workers actually have won the opportunity to exercise their rights. It's not enough, and the First Amendment needs to be enforced here, but there's always work to be done. And to your point, union officials are not giving up easily on this.
And I know a lot of teachers who are very upset that because they wanted in-person learning, they wanted to stop the hybrid, and that they are dropping their union. Has anybody else reached out to you?
Yeah, we have about 35 cases going, active cases that are Janus related, and there are other groups. Liberty Justice Center has cases, the Freedom Foundation out on the West Coast, and the Mackinac Center, and a few other organizations have got cases. There's about 96 active cases as of the beginning of June there, that we're currently working their way through the process. And so there's lots going on. There's lots of information out there. It is problematic because teacher unions are certainly not going to let their members know, and school boards are not going to let their teachers know what their rights are vis-a-vis this union coercion.
Besides the escape clauses you described, what are some of the other hurdles that the unions are throwing up to try to, you know, East Germany style keep people in?
Well, just, you know, kind of the information blackout, Dan, and then the escape periods, and then the idea that they just ignore teachers. Those are the types of things. I mean, there's several different iterations of cases, the escape period being one. There's clawback cases where we're trying to get money back for those workers. We continue to litigate that on behalf of Mark Janus, and the Supreme Court decided that they were going to do it prospectively, not retrospectively, even though under black-letter law, when you decide a constitutional question, it's as if that always existed, but the Supreme Court wasn't willing to jump back into that pool and give relief to those workers that were exercising their rights back to the statute of limitations. So, you know, the First Amendment applied starting June 27, 2018. It didn't apply anything behind that. But there's still litigation on that front, and there's still work to do, for sure.
Yeah, in Illinois, there's a ballot question that is passed, will be on the November 2022 ballot. That's really interesting, what the General Assembly here did, perhaps you know. But what it says: employers shall have the fundamental right to organize and to bargain collectively through representatives of their own choosing for the purpose of negotiating wages, hours, working conditions, and to protect their economic welfare and safety at work. No law shall be passed that interferes with, negates, or diminishes the right of employees to organize and bargain collectively. So, first of all, throwing in economic welfare, I mean, that's the kitchen sink language, number one. Yeah. And number two, no law shall diminish the right of employees, which is unnecessary. It's sort of redundant, but it almost speaks to a desire that this be in force over Supreme Court jurisprudence when it comes to these matters.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, in a way, it's kind of flattering, Dan. We passed five new right-to-work laws in the last 10 years, including in Michigan and Wisconsin and Indiana, surrounding Illinois. And what they're actually trying to do, what all that mumbo-jumbo that you just read means, is they are going to prohibit the legislature from ever considering a right-to-work law in the state of Illinois. That's what they want to do, and that's what they're scared of. And interestingly enough, it was Bob King, the former president of the United Auto Workers Union, who's in this case, is free on retirement. The last two presidents are in jail at this point. But Bob King is still out there in the public domain. And once we passed the law in Indiana, he put a ballot on the initiative on the ballot in Michigan to do exactly what you're trying to do in Illinois, and it failed by 16 points. And about 3 weeks later, Michigan became a right-to-work state. So I don't know if that'll happen in Illinois, but that's what it's about. It's about forcing workers to pay union dues to keep their jobs in perpetuity.
And so, as you know, these cases wind their way through the courts, I mean, what is your now revised perspective on the impact Janus is going to have, say, in the next 5 or 10 years? I mean, states that are dominated by the public sector unions and destroyed by them, like Illinois, you know, a lot of people recognize until you can rebalance the balance of power away from the public sector unions, you're going to continue to have a state that is not a pleasant place to be, like Illinois is not, that is unlivable at an exorbitant price. And so, you know, give us your recalibration on the impact Janus will have on the power of public sector unions in this country.
Well, first and foremost, workers have that First Amendment right. Exercising it's the next big step. I think the impact will be dramatic. It will come to be that workers will understand that they have the right. And frankly, I think the unions will be the ones that change it, because ultimately, I believe that they have to see that voluntary unionism is the only recipe for their continued survival. I mean, the fact that they have to force people into these union collectives and then, you know, bill the taxpayers for it in an exorbitant way, like in California, Illinois, New Jersey, New York, etc., that will come back. It just takes time. And Dan, you've been at this a long time, I know. Amy, you've been talking about it a long time. I've been at it a long time, and there's progress being made. Oftentimes it's slow. It's not as dramatic as we'd like, but it's there, and we can continue to work on it. And this experiment, the American way is that individual rights will prevail, and I believe that, and we have to believe that as we continue to go. Our 21 attorneys are working hard for employees across the country that want to exercise these rights, and you never know. I mean, Janus was kind of a lightning strike, as was the passage of the right strict work law in Indiana and in Michigan and Wisconsin and Kentucky and West Virginia over the last 10 years. So we just got to keep fighting at it, keep informing people of their rights, and provide the services they need to get out. That's what we'll do.
He is Mark Mix, president of National Right to Work Foundation. Mark, good luck in court.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you. Yep, thanks. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Speaking of Justin's engagement, a few years text from 847. A few years ago, you were going to marry yourself. Did you ever propose? Great question. Thanks for following up on my relationship status. No, I ended up breaking up with myself.
Why'd you break up with yourself? You just didn't want to spend more time with yourself?
Grew apart. Yeah.
But people actually marry themselves.
No, I know. Sologamist. Sologamy. It's a big thing.
Oh, I've never known.
It's all the rage.
Sologamist?
Sologamist. Sologamy. Yeah, that's right.
Elaborate parties, walk down the aisle by themselves. It's just goofy.
I know we want to wear masks forever, and that's what we're being asked to do to stop the Delta variant now.
Well, WHO came out over the weekend and suggested since there's this new Delta variant, which is now being called Delta Plus, that's a variant on the variant, said that we should continue to socially distance, even though we've been vaccinated. And even if you've been vaccinated, continue to wear masks. Who's in? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer.
Yeah, I mean, for example, and, you know, this is, look, this is safety first. This is way to go, way to ease back into it. At the Philadelphia Naked Bike Ride.
Oh, I love that. You participated in that last year.
Thousands of naked people on bike rides, on bikes, will ride through downtown Philadelphia on August 28th. And the thing that's most offensive, not the naked.
What?
It's the bikes. August 28th, 10-mile loop around the city.
Tell me you have to wear a mask, please.
Mask required. August 28th for Philly's Naked Bike Ride. Out of an abundance of caution.
What about covering the other part of your body? Because they do test for COVID down there.
Well, that wouldn't be a naked bike ride then, wouldn't it? Rick in Downers Grove.
Hey, I noticed you guys been on a joke-telling frenzy over the last couple of weeks.
Well, I have been, and it might have been very good, but go ahead.
Okay.
Well, I got a couple of good ones. They're quick and they're clean.
Uh-huh.
Well, the first one's kind of more of a fun fact, but historians believe that the toothbrush was invented in Kentucky because otherwise it'd be known as a teeth brush. That's the first one. And the second one is
lame.
Oh, come on, that's a good one. But here, this one's a good one. And this is for Amy. And let me just state right now, I'm an animal lover, but here it comes. How do you turn cute, cuddly little kittens into great big dogs? A little gasoline and woof.
Oh, my. So, have you been talking to John Cass? He hates cats, too.
Well.
Meow, meow.
I don't know, Rick. Hardly.
That's really bad. The first one was offensive, and the second one was very offensive.
No, it's
I'm offended. I need an apology.
It's lame. Not like my golf jokes. Speaking of animals, though, what you had some be in your bonnet, speaking of animals, over veterinarians and COVID.
Well, I wrote an
email.
Are
they naked with masks? Or what,
no,
what?
No. I wrote an email to my vet because I was very upset that they're still not allowing us in to see our animals. And just so you know, when you change vets, so then I went to a different vet because we ended our relationship.
Uh-huh.
When they attach your dog's information, they put in emails and correspondence between you and them. So they're blackballing me in Chicago. I cannot find a vet anywhere in Chicago. Because
how many vets have you gone to? Two?
Three.
Three. I think there are more. I'm not sure. I don't know what the number is, but I think there are more than three vets. My friend's wife is a vet, but she's down in the south suburbs, I think.
Okay.
But you need a vet that's not like a COVID enthusiast.
COVID freak.
That's the problem you have with your vets, these vets. And you're being blackballed by the two vets that you've gone to. Because,
yeah, they
Why?
Because I wrote an email just saying, you know, what are you, you know.
You wrote an email to your vet saying, what are you doing?
Right. Everyone's back at work. Teachers are back at work.
Right.
And I'm sure that you're going to the hairdresser, to the gym, to church, to restaurants, to grocery stores. So why aren't you back seeing animals with their owners? Because animals are like children. We wouldn't drop our baby off at the pediatrician and say, hey, doc, just take a look at her and I'll be out waiting in my car. Because kids have no voice. And animals have no voice. And they needed to, well, they're one of the professions. They're the last holdouts. The last
one. The last holdouts to work, you mean?
To see people, to see patients, to interact with the public. They're the last one. Teachers were back.
I don't know. I mean, I don't go to the doctor, and Hayek doesn't go to the vet.
Why doesn't
we're
Hayek,
similar that way.
What about his immunization shot, like his rabies?
Hayek is an anti-vaxxer.
Oh, really?
Larry and Bartlett.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. I was just hoping after 45 years of experience, I can offer Justin the official new husband mantra. Yes, dear. I'm sorry, dear. You're right, dear. It'll never happen again, dear.
All right, very good. Thanks for that, Larry. Passing on that wisdom to young Justin. Why Dan Proft is single. Chris and Carrie, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning. I'm really disappointed in this news out of Israel. I just read an article this morning.
Yeah.
I think it came out actually a few days ago about this new variant from India, this Delta variant, that half of the infected adults right now are currently vaccinated. So, and they're going back to the mask mandate. So I'm getting annoyed and depressed that we're going to be right back to where we were with the schools, with everything. I mean,
WTF.
Not.
Thanks for the call, Chris. Right, because, the goalposts have been moved so many times. Now it's zero COVID is the only thing that's acceptable. Oh, by the way, news out of Sweden, 7-day moving average, 7-day moving average for daily deaths in Sweden as of June 24th.
Zero. And we have 70 Delta variant, 70 Chicagoans have the Delta variant, but I asked Dr. Wardy how many are hospitalized. Zero. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the alarming news out of Israel, half of those vaccinated have the Delta variant. That doesn't mean we need to know what hospitalizations are, if they're even hospitalized.
We can't live life if anybody gets sick.
And
that,
what if...
why does that standard only apply to COVID? Let's just apply it to everything. And again, then way nobody can be sick, although that's where you'll get sick is when you're locked in, as we saw with COVID. But nonetheless, right. If that's what you believe, fine, because I want the roadways clear.
But we're never going to get out of it, because come the fall, they're going to test healthy kids during school. And healthy kids might be shedding the virus or might have had it before. And so this is never going to end unless parents fight back. There's no way. Thanks so much for making us part of your morning. Thanks to...
We have to go play golf now.
Oh, we have to play. Oh, that's right. We have to play. I wonder how Sean's doing in his, because he's already teed off.
Hit the ball down the field, as Amy would say.
I said down the fairway.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.